Today on Political Rewind, an exclusive interview with Teresa Tomlinson on the day she's declared her intention to seek the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate. Plus, our panel looks at how 2020 legislative and U.S. House races are shaping up now that the General Assembly has finished its work for the year. This is Political Rewind. Glad to have all of you with us for Political Rewind today. I'm Bill Nygut. We got a lot to talk about, so let's get right to our panel. As usual, the AJC lead political writer, Jim Galloway, is with us in the studio. You read him on Wednesdays and Sundays in the paper, and he oversees the Political Insider blog. Hi, Jim.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here today. Now that we're all still recovering from the legislative session, it's behind us and we can move on to other topics.
We've got a weekend ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Eric Tannenblatt is back with us. He, of course, is very active in Republican Party politics in Georgia, nationally. He was one of Mitt Romney's key fundraisers during the 2012 election. He had worked for a long time with the Bushes, George H.W., George W. Bush. Glad to have you here, Eric.
Glad to be here.
Also with us today and back after we've talked about this briefly, her new son, Jack, has arrived, and Stacey Evans is back with us. Stacey, of course, was a member of the state legislature and then ran against Stacey Abrams in the Democratic primary for governor. You look as though you're getting some sleep.
Thank you. I am. Jack is a good baby. We're very, very lucky.
I've told you before we went on the air, it was really gratifying. We mentioned it on the air right after the baby was born. And so many of our listeners wanted to wish you well. I just thought that was lovely.
Thank you to them. That's very sweet. Makes a new mom feel great.
Yeah. And joining us, you know, it's really wonderful to introduce you, Teresa Tomlinson. You have been a long time panelist on Political Rewind, and we've loved having you on, doing crossing swords with Republicans on the panel. And now you join us, having just this morning filed your papers to start an exploratory bid for U.S. Senate. Before we say talk about anything else, help our people know, our listeners know, what's the difference between launching an exploratory committee and actually declaring your candidate?
Well, there are certain things that you can't do. You can't say that I hereby declare. You have to really actually look into it. So maybe that it's very appropriate in this circumstance. We've been at this a long time. But the terrain has changed a little bit, and I know we'll talk about that more in depth. But yes, there are some things you can't do, but there are some things you can do.
You can
and that's
now
raise money and spend money.
Okay,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
That said, why don't we start with the most basic question? Mm-hmm. Why do you want to be in the United States Senate?
Well, I happen to be very adept at resolving dysfunction, solving the unsolvable, and it seems like the United States Senate is in desperate need of those skills. And so I thought that I had a unique skill set that my country and the U.S. Senate needed. So,
Jim Galloway, I want to bring you in. Of course, I should establish your other credentials. You're the immediate past mayor of Columbus, Georgia, but you grew up here in Metro Atlanta in
the Shambly-Dunwoody area. I went to Shambly High School.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about credentials in a while. Jim, you want to jump in?
Well, number one, the in your press release this morning, there was one major caveat, of course, and that's. What will Stacey Abrams do?
Right.
And your candidacy could be contingent on that. I mean, have you had a chance to talk with her over the last couple of weeks or so?
Yes. Well, we've stayed, you know, she's been very busy, obviously. She's traveling now on her book tour. But given that busy schedule, we've stayed in good contact. We've met personally. We've talked on the phone. We have some text communications, again, when schedules allow. And so she was very well aware of this. And so we've just touched base during the process. But to sort of explain what's going on, you know, we've been, our team, looking at this race for, well, a little over a year. And so back in the fall, when you all were all very much engaged in the 2018 effort, we were assembling a team and working toward making an announcement. And then, of course, Senator Schumer, the minority leader and the head of the Democratic Party in the Senate, really suggested to Stacey, asked her to serve as the Democratic's nominee, be in that race, and for the DSCC to support them. And so we've been standing down since that time because clearly, as I've said before in the show, Stacey has caught lightning in a bottle. It's a unique time, and so we were standing down letting her consider that option.
Now, you met Wednesday with Schumer.
Yes.
And Schumer met Thursday with Ms. Abrams.
Yes. Yes, I'd actually met with the DSC previously, back in January. And so we've been in touch throughout the process. This last time was, I was actually invited to come up and meet with the staff for the entire day. They do a vetting process, go through a lot of different things about structure and just the nuts and bolts of the campaign. And then met privately with Senator Cortez Masto, who is the head for this two-year period of the DSCC. And then a private meeting with Senator Schumer.
Just a question. You said in your release that if Stacey Abrams runs, that you won't, that you'll support her. If she doesn't run, will she support you?
Well, we'll find out. I mean, you know, won't we find out? You know, it will be interesting to see because she has a lot of options that have been talked about publicly. So if she's running for president, for instance, let's just say hypothetically, that might be an odd position for her if it's a contested primary. So I don't know, but I feel that I'm going to be a strong candidate. And so if we're in that situation and it's the appropriate time to endorse, I bet I have a very, very good shot at it.
Stacey so we'll Evans, I certainly don't want to, you have not said this, and I want to make that clear, but I think any number of us who go down to the Capitol at all have heard lately, especially from some Democrats, that they're starting to get impatient. That, I mean, Stacey Abrams and Teresa Tomlinson has wisely said over and over, she has the right to decide to do whatever she wants. But there's a sense that it's about time that this race has got to be joined pretty soon.
Absolutely. Well, and as somebody who recently ended a statewide campaign, you need a runway. If you haven't gotten to introduce yourself to the voters statewide, you need a runway. Now, Stacey Abrams has the advantage that she doesn't need that runway anymore because everybody knows who she is, not just in Georgia, but in the country. And Teresa's right, and others who have said it are right, that she's performed well. She's earned the right to take her time. But at the same time, this is Georgia's seat. This is not Stacey's seat or anybody else's. And Democrats have a very, very good chance to win, to unseat an incumbent, and help Democrats take the majority in the Senate. And so if it's not going to be Stacey Abrams, we've got to get going. And so I just want to commend you for starting that process, even with the caveat. That's got to be weird. But but I'm so glad you did it because we need to get going because we got to win.
It is actually fitting sort of naturally under the circumstances. It's been an evolution of the process. And this feels very right. We were bumping up against the FEC $5,000 limit for those who maybe don't know all the rules and regulations when we began to stand down, and none of my folks have been paid for this 8-10 week period, and thank you to the team. But there were just nominal expenses, and once they, you know, we were waiting, and then the time frame had to be extended because of Stacey's book tour, which is fine. We just had to do this, and so the exploratory committee was the perfect solution.
Yeah, I think the conversation took a corner this week when Abrams was on MSNBC, the Morning Joe.
Yes. Jim, I love that. Finish that thought, and then we'll actually listen to one of the things she
basically
said.
Basically, what she said was that she's still considering the presidential run, and she'll make a decision on that in September. If you're making a decision on that in September, you can't be running for Senate in the spring.
Let's listen to what Abrams told MSNBC.
Are you considering a run for the White House? When you should jump in.
I am thinking about it. I truly am. I think that the timing for me is first deciding about the Senate, because I do think you cannot run for an office unless you know that's the job you want to do. Mm-hmm. I don't think you use offices as stepping stones. And so my first responsibility is to determine whether a Senate run is right for me. And then the next conversation for myself will be, if not the Senate, then what else?
Okay, but that's a pretty quick timeline, though, on a decision.
It is. Well, I think the Senate decision is going to be pretty short term. Mm-hmm. I intended to do it in March, but because of my book tour, I had to push it back. But I do want to make a decision this month. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think you actually have to make a decision about the White House before the fall.
Teresa?
Yes.
You've heard her say that any number of times. It is It is when I saw the news release that your team sent out this morning. The headline is former mayor files for Senate race in Georgia, comma, running if Abrams doesn't.
Right.
The comma is problematic. It's got to be a little awkward.
Well, I mean, it's unusual, but this whole thing is unusual. Yeah. I mean, we've all been in politics a very long time. I've never seen anything quite like this. And that Stacey Abrams is this strong, progressive voice on the national stage, that the DSCC has, you know, really come in and said this will be our candidate. That all is very unusual. But at the same time, I have to say, Stacey has been gracious with me at this time, because I think that it was a difficult position for her, I'm sure, as these opportunities began rolling in at a clip that she could not have imagined up until, you know, November, late November.
Let me ask a question to both you and Eric, and that is this upcoming Senate race in Georgia, could it be the race that determines control?
Sure. I mean, I think that this is going to be a hotly contested election across the board. It's a presidential election, and there's Senate races. I think the Senate map is not as good for Republicans as it was the last cycle. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of competitive seats, and I think Senator Schumer trying to recruit Stacey. I mean, it's all about money. Mm-hmm. You know, they have scarce resources, and they got to deploy it where they think they can make the biggest difference. And I think in the case of Stacey, because her name ID is so high, they probably view her as a very competitive candidate. But I got to say, as an observer, not a Democrat, that if I was someone in the Democratic Party, I would think Stacey's starting to come across as looking pretty self-centered, and, you know, to Democrats in the state. And I think you're starting, you know, you said you picked up some things down at the Capitol. I think there is that sentiment here. You may not see it nationally among Democrats, but I think here in the state, people are wondering, do you really care about the Georgia Democratic Party? Because you can't wait much longer. And if she decides not to run, and you hadn't taken this action today, every day that goes by becomes more and more difficult.
I think they're getting frustrated. I mean, I don't know that it's in the negative light that you have.
Well, of course, you want her support.
Yeah. But I really do think that people are just—they're anxious. They want to go. The level of enthusiasm around the state is like nothing I have ever seen in an off year. There should not be 110 people packed in to a pancakes and politics breakfast in February of an off year. Mm-hmm. What is going on? People are very engaged.
That's happened to you.
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure what you were saying.
It's happening all over, yeah.
And I think you're right. It is, mm-hmm. It is more frustration because there are 110 people at the pancake breakfast that are going on all over the state. Yeah. And David Perdue is out there saying what he's saying and doing what he's doing every day, and there's not a candidate calling him on it. Mm-hmm. Whereas now that you're in it, mm-hmm. I know that you will be holding his feet to the fire. You have to have a campaign to do that.
Okay. Let me stop for a second, because David Perdue has already weighed in. He was in Macon this morning and was asked about the fact that you have now filed as potential candidate for the U.S. Senate. Let's listen to what Senator Perdue had to say.
Well, I think she'll be a good candidate. You know, she was a mayor of Columbus, and this is a representative democracy. I'm anxious to see how the Democrat primary runs next year, and we'll see who the candidate against us will eventually be.
Sounds like an endorsement. Let me throw it out to all of you. How tough is David Perdue going to be in a general election? His favorable unfavorables are higher than, at least the last time the AJC polled, which has been a little bit of time now, but they were higher than Brian Kemp. They were higher than President Trump. He's still underwater. I think he was sitting at about 44%, 45% approved favorable.
I think it was 45%, 46%, 47% in a January poll.
Right.
And up more in the suburbs than other Republicans.
Yes,
that's important. That's
a key. How tough is he going to be? I want to give everybody a chance at that.
I think he's going to be tough, and I think that's why we need to get going in the race. I mean, he's an incumbent. He's going to have the support of the president, which means money. And he beat how many people last time to win with that damn jean jacket, right? Let's be honest. He's going to be tough.
Yeah, but knock the jean jacket.
It works.
Hey, I like jean jackets.
It works.
He's going to be a very formidable incumbent. And, you know, when you're running a state race, like we just saw in the governor's race, the issue set's a little different. And, you know, one thing I'd like to ask you, because, you know, this is going to be a national election. You're running for the U.S. Senate. You know, you saw this when Zell Miller went up to Washington and, you know, he threw his hands up because the National Democratic Party was so far to the left from where Georgia voters are. How are you going to deal, or what's your position of things like the Green New Deal and some of these progressive issues, which seem to be really the focus of the National Democratic Party?
Right. Well, I think on a lot of those things, Eric, they're actually, I am a progressive, and I'm a proud progressive. I just happen to be a pragmatist. Having been a mayor, I make government work, right? And so a lot of these things that when Republicans such as yourself are talking about them and your hair gets on fire about, oh, that's so far left. The fact of the matter, if you take it down in bite sizes, and by the way, had we listened to Al Gore and Jimmy Carter, the quote, Green New Deal would not be as extreme in your view. It could have been more incremental. Now the runway is a whole lot shorter to resolve what is climate change and damaging our farmlands and our shorelands and our city streets and so forth, right? So I think when you talk about, can a progressive from Georgia make it in Washington, D.C., where there's going to be other perhaps more quote-unquote liberal views. Well, the fact of the matter is if you begin breaking things down and thinking how you can make that and adopt that incrementally, you'd be surprised how the people then understand it. It's only when Republicans are allowed to own the microphone and say that's just a liberal, far-left, economy-crushing proposal. But hopefully I have all of the confidence in the world that I can break it down and show people how they save money off of something actually saves the environment.
It's interesting, Eric. The ground is shifting on the environment, on environmental issues. Just this week, we had Congressman Buddy Carter down in Savannah. He represents the 1st District, which covers the entire coast.
Quite a conservative Republican.
Right. Mm-hmm. He wrote a letter to the Trump administration saying Georgia wants out of the oil exploration approval that he was going to give on the Atlantic seaboard.
Of course, Governor Deal had said he didn't want it either back when he was in office.
Well, the climate change thing is costing Georgians and cities. In Columbus, our streets, we've had 100-year floods, several 100-year floods in 10 years. Our city streets are flooding. They're cracking and all this. That's happening all over the place, and we're not even on a shoreline.
Yeah, we're paying for it anyway. I guess my big thing is that, you know, unfortunately, and I really do mean this, unfortunately, we have become such a polarized country right now. And Washington in particular, it's become a team sport. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to decide, are you going to vote for Senator Schumer for leader or Senator McConnell for leader? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the National Democratic Party, I think, is completely out of line with Georgia, even progressive. You know, some people who identify themselves as progressive in Georgia.
Stacey Evans, why don't you weigh in on this? Because you ran, when you were running your primary campaign against Abrams, you ran a somewhat more traditional Democratic philosophical center. And she ran to the left, and we saw what happened there and how close she came to winning the governor's seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we were both running as the progressive candidates that we are. I think her race took on more of a national tone, mine was more Georgia. And I think some magical combination of those two things is what's going to be necessary to win. You obviously need to catch at least some fundraising fire nationally because it's going to be an expensive race. It is a national position because you are in the U.S. Senate. But at the end of the day, the candidates who did the best in 2018 were the ones that kept it local. You look at Michigan and many other states, and I think that's going to be the key for us as Democrats to straddle
in the U.S. Senate race.
I did an interview with Senator Perdue about a week and a half ago, and one of the things, it's funny you brought up the denim jacket, the jeans jacket. One of the things I said to him was, you know, Senator, you made a lot out of being an outsider in your first run for the U.S. Senate. You're not an outsider anymore. I mean, you are now a close ally of President Trump's. I don't think you can be much more of an insider than to be tied to the White House. So if you're not an outsider anymore, how do you position yourself? He said, I don't agree with that. I will still run as an outsider. President Trump remains an outsider, a disruptor. What do you think when you hear him say that?
Well, I think it's hard to characterize it like that, obviously, and we'll have plenty of time to get into the campaign. But I know also I've heard him describe himself as a co-pilot for the president, an influencer of the president, and that's clearly an insider, you know. And also I think, you know, one thing that citizens want, particularly in Georgia, is they want accessibility. They want to know their elected officials are responsive to them. And I think that that defines whether you're, quote, an insider or outsider. How much time are you spending on the streets of Georgia and in town halls and things of that nature responding to the concerns of the citizens?
It's interesting. Yeah. Teresa Tomlinson didn't quite say it, but one of the knocks we always hear about David Perdue is that he hasn't been doing town meetings. Mm-hmm. There are people who come back from Washington and say, gee, we were with a business delegation, we met with Senator Isaacson, we met with some of our members of Congress, we had trouble getting a meeting that would include Senator Perdue. I don't know to what extent that's really happening, but it's certainly in the atmosphere and will come up during this campaign.
Well, he is engaged. He has been running for some time as if he were going to face Stacey Abrams, and he understood that that was going to be a race. He's been coming home quite a lot. I mean, that clip that we just played, he was in Macon, I believe.
Yes.
I mean, they're off this week, I think. But he is, maybe he's not doing formal town halls, but he is out there. He is out there with a full campaign.
In campaign.
But is he out there as a member of the Senate?
I don't know who you're talking to, but I have found him since he got elected to be very much out and about. And it almost seems like he was running for re-election after he got elected, which I think is a smart move. You know, one thing that's interesting that a lot of people don't realize is statewide Republicans, if you look in the last three decades, when incumbents run for re-election, they do a lot better with the different demographics that didn't vote for them, for independent voters and even some Democrats, because there's a skepticism because they just think, oh, you're a Republican, so I can't support someone like that. And then once they're in office and they show what they do and they have a record, they're more willing to vote for them. And David Perdue, just like Johnny Isaacson, has been very responsive to constituents.
Thank you.
And that's important.
Again, I made the point that
that's why he's showing higher in the polls, I think, because
may
people
very well
see
be.
What he's done.
Let me throw one other question to you. Cody Hall, who is, of course, Governor Kemp's press secretary, is watching the show now, and he apparently sent a note to Tom Faust saying, ask Teresa Tomlinson where she stands on getting this emergency relief package you make it happen.
That is a critical example.
Sure, we all need
it. Dysfunction in Washington, D.C. In what world are we pitting U.S. citizens against each other in order to provide disaster relief? This has become a Senate of ego and dysfunction. It seriously is. Why are we talking about, we have had disasters from fires to floods to hurricanes. Puerto Rico was affected by a hurricane and Georgia was affected by a hurricane. Why in the world are we pitting U.S. citizens in Puerto Rico against U.S. citizens in Georgia? This country has never done that before, and it's because of political ego. And that's exactly...
Is that true on both sides of the aisle?
We need another ethic. Why in the world this Puerto Rico second-class citizen type thing even began is unfortunate because it's contrary to the ethic of the United States and how we respond to our citizens when it's come to disaster relief. So what has happened is people are not looking at a solution or the resolution. They're addicted to the fight.
Should Democrats be continuing to fight with the president on the Puerto Rican piece of this if it continues to stop the package from getting to farmers in your neck of the woods and below?
What we need to do, and was it Cody Hall you said?
Yeah.
Mr. Hall, what we need to do is provide the relief that is needed for Puerto Rico because it has been appropriated and not distributed. And that's what's causing the debate. And so we can provide the desperately needed relief here in Georgia. Why this has become a political football of some citizens being more important than the other only shows that we have the wrong leadership. And as long as we keep electing the wrong people, we're not going to get good government.
Just numbers, I think maybe $41-44 billion has been appropriated. Maybe $11 billion has gotten into Puerto Rico, I think is the number.
Right, and $5 million of that was just debris removal. I mean, you know, this is a, and what happens, this is why people aren't thinking, what happens if Puerto Rico becomes civically dysfunctional, right? What happens if it just breaks down? That is one of our territories. It's so close to the United States. What happens when there becomes a civic vacuum? Why is nobody thinking about what this means to the United States and to our national security interest and just the interest of our fellow U.S. citizens?
We're going to have to take a break. Anybody want to weigh in? One more question for Teresa Tomlinson? All right. Teresa Tomlinson, you know, for over the last 4+ years, you've come in here as a member of the panel. We've, as I said when I introduced you, it's been great to have you here. Now that you're launching or on the verge of launching a campaign, we can't have you as a regular panelist anymore. And in fact, with that in mind, because you're on the verge of candidacy, we're going to continue today's conversation after saying goodbye to you, wishing you well. It'll be fascinating.
Thank you. Just think,
we'll all be talking about you instead of listening to you.
Well, I'll tune in when it's good. I'll turn you off. But Bill, thank you so much. It's been wonderful. No matter where I go in the state, people talk about this show and how refreshing it is to hear people talk in a civil matter about things that are important and how it educates them to the nuances of the issues and why maybe there are stumbling blocks of the things that seem like they're so easy to do. So you're providing real service, and it's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Teresa. Let's do this. Let's take a break. Before we take a break, I want to say one important thing. Stacey Abrams, we've been in communication ever since the governor's race about having her back on the show. We're still hoping we'll be able to do something with her. We talked to David Perdue's office about bringing him in all the time. If another Democrat emerges in this Senate race, of course that Democrat will be welcome. Just want to make sure you know that our intention is to give you an opportunity to hear from the candidates who are running for the U.S. Senate and beyond. With that said, let's take a break. And we'll come back with more on Political Rewind.
Lawrence Bartley spent 27 years behind bars. Now he's out, and he's created a print magazine to distribute back into prisons.
Many of the men on the inside just wish they can just have a glimpse of what the outside is. And I thought it was important to bring that to them.
I'm Ari Shapiro, a former inmate's quest to bring stories to the incarcerated. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
It's 4 till 7 on GPB and gpbnews.org.
Are you thinking of getting rid of your old car, truck, or RV? GPB's Vehicle Donation Program is here to help. Donating has never been easier. We'll take care of everything, including free pickup of your vehicle. Just go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR. That's 877-472-1227. And thanks so much.
My name is Chuck Reese. I'm the editor of an online magazine called The Bitter Southerner. I've seen decades of misconceptions about the South from the Beverly Hillbillies on down. But in my new podcast with GPB, we're going to challenge those stereotypes and paint a very different picture of the American South. Join me for The Bitter Southerner podcast. Details are at bittersoutherner.com.
I'm Ira Flatow. Have you had a hard workout, a long run? Don't ice those muscles, don't stretch, roll those thighs. This week on Science Friday, debunking your exercise recovery routine. Plus, Washington State Governor Jay Inslee talks about focusing his 2020 campaign for the White House on climate change. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today at 3 on GPB and gpbnews.org.
We're back on Political Rewind. Our thanks to Teresa Tomlinson. Jim Galloway, with Teresa Tomlinson being on the verge of entering the race, forming a committee, starting to raise money, is the dam breaking here? Are we likely to see other Democrats who may be a little cautious about Stacey Abrams, but now feel we'd better
I think you could see a many more exploration committees formed.
So who's going to?
John Ossoff, we know, is considering it. Sarah Riggs Amico, the former Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor. And let me ask you, Stacey.
I'm not running.
No. But I will tell you what, one name that has just jumped up in the last couple of weeks, and you can probably imagine why is that of Jen Jordan. Have you heard?
I have. And I've known Jen for a long time as a lawyer, and as a friend, and she'd be extremely formidable.
She took mm-hmm. the lead in the fight against HB 481, the heartbeat mm-hmm. bill.
Yeah, and suddenly found certainly not with the magnitude of a Stacey Abrams, but for that brief period mm-hmm. of time, Jen Jordan was all over
Absolutely.
The national news because of her impassioned speech.
I would have to also say if Stacey Abrams does not run, there'll be a minority candidate, an African-American candidate, that mm-hmm. will get in that Senate race, too, because all the candidates you just referenced are white candidates.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Maybe Michael Thurman. We've talked about that on the show once before.
Yeah,
or maybe after
have.
The show. Maybe we didn't do it on
you're,
air.
You're not ready to announce for anything, are you?
I'm not announcing anything today other than my baby woke up only two times last night.
Wait, you said excited. Today.
Well, for a while.
I don't want to lose another panelist. We like having Stacey Abrams. Eric, let's talk just a little bit about that, what we did a minute ago. David Perdue has aligned himself with Trump as closely as any other official on Capitol Hill. Is that going to serve him well in his reelection campaign, or is he going to have to be a little cautious?
Well, no, I don't think he's going to run from having a relationship with the president.
Well, he can at this point.
No, but I think it's a benefit to the state to have the ear of the president, and I just happen to know, just from talking to people, that the president values David's opinion, and I think that having a U.S. senator that has influence. I want David Perdue to have the president's ear because I think David Perdue is a wise person and has some good things that he could, good ideas of how to approach things. And, when there are times that get contentious, you need to be able to have people that can pick up the phone and, share some wisdom with the president. So the fact that our U.S. senator has that relationship, I think, is a positive. I don't believe he's a clone of the president, and he's going to have to, show where he differentiates himself from the president. But I think it's a net positive.
I think if we're guided by the most recent governor's race, Brian Kemp got 50.2% of the vote by concentrating slowly outside Metro Atlanta.
Right.
As we've said, David Perdue does a little bit better in polls within suburban Atlanta. I think he's going to have to really work to hang on to that. If he can hang on to the Northern Arc, or at least do better than Kemp did, then I think he'll do all right. But there are going to be some things that impact him. Just as they impact every other Republican, like HB 481, mm-hmm. the heartbeat bill, that is going to hurt Republicans at all levels in North Metro Atlanta. I think
absolutely. I would hate to be David Perdue or other candidates who are trying to juggle how do I do well in the suburbs, how do I do well with folks that maybe aren't feeling great about Trump, whether they're Democrat or Republican, but also keep him happy. Because I think if you talk to most normal leaders and candidates that have run with them in the leadership, like let's say, for example, Nancy Pelosi and somebody who might be running for Congress, I've heard she says, where I can help you, I'm happy to be there. But if it helps you to not mention my name, do it. You're not going to hurt my feelings. Trump's ego is so frail and so sensitive that a David Perdue can't not. How's that for a double negative? He can't not embrace the president because then the president will lash out at
him. Okay, but Stacey, I can't help. I mean, this is me speculating and reading into mm-hmm. the comments that David Perdue made. I can't help but think to myself, boy, is David Perdue relieved if it's Teresa Tomlinson, not Stacey Abrams. Not that Teresa mm-hmm. cannot build herself into being a really formidable candidate, but she's got a lot of groundwork to do before mm-hmm. she becomes Stacey Abrams
sure.
and
Absolutely.
Has that, right?
She has to introduce herself. I think from a money perspective, certainly.
Yeah.
He's happy about that. But Teresa has very, very good credentials, as do some of the others that have been mentioned. And so I don't know that he's not, he may be less nervous for different reasons.
But the other thing, too, is keep in mind that the Democrats have an open primary for president. And you have, I don't know what it is now, 30 candidates running. And they're all going to be competing for money. Mm-hmm. And so here, Teresa, whoever gets into the Senate race, if Stacey does not, is going to have to introduce themselves and try and garner support while competing with all these presidential candidates. And when you have a presidential race, that's really the race, the top of the ticket.
That's true.
The question for you, and Bill, I hope you don't mind changing topics, but with Eric here,
you're virtually a co-host. You can do whatever you want.
Okay, just if we can shift off Purdue just a little bit, we've got this very, very interesting race shaping up in the 6th District.
That's where I was headed.
with you here, we've got to ask you, how do you handicap the Karen Handel and Brandon Beach?
Let's say one thing before you answer that, just to frame it a little. Jim, you mentioned on this show a while ago, when Karen Handel first declared that she was a candidate, you said you thought the timing was interesting because she was declaring her candidacy toward the end of a reporting cycle. Mm-hmm. And the question was whether that was a smart thing to do because it meant she'd have to report and maybe not. And in fact, she came in with, 340,000,
50,000?
Yeah.
Right.
She, especially for a candidate who, over her history, has never been thought of as a great fundraiser, she did really well.
She did, and you know, Senator Beach was tied up in the legislature. I haven't seen if he's disclosed any numbers. I know that he was raising money. Look, he has a constituency up in North Fulton. Karen has the whole county or the whole district, and she represented the county and was Secretary of State. So Brandon has a similar, you know, challenge to Teresa in that he's got to introduce himself to the rest of the district, where Karen doesn't have to spend as much as Brandon does. So, and Karen has, it appears as though she's being treated as an incumbent if you look at the endorsements that came down from, you know, Leader McCarthy, Scalise, I mean, and the congressional delegation. So I think it's going to be an uphill battle for Senator Beach, but look, he's a fighter, so I wouldn't rule him out. I also think that having a woman running against a woman is appealing to a lot of people, especially given what the Republican Party saw just happened in the last election cycle with suburban women.
She got, Kendall received the endorsement of 6 of Georgia's 9 incumbent House members, Republican House members, but which means three didn't. David Perdue and Johnny Isaacson are also staying out of this contest.
Mm. Sure. Well,
are there other Republicans that are getting in?
The only one I've heard is Brandon, the two of them, but I'm not sure. It's still early.
Brandon Beach, Jim, you've pointed this out on the show before. Brandon Beach has been a popular legislator up in Alpharetta, North Fulton County, but his big issue has been transportation, transit being part of that, and Gwinnett turns down MARTA. The legislature ends up not expanding the tax districts for rural Georgia. I don't know how much impact that has on Brandon Beach's campaign, but he can't now claim that his work as the champion of transportation has paid off.
Well, what some of us thought might happen is if Gwinnett had passed the MARTA referendum on March 19th,
then
you would have had some contagion in North Fulton that probably would have helped him.
All right.
Yeah, before you get off of that though, I don't want to. Brandon Beach deserves a lot of credit for really raising the whole transportation issue.
Yeah.
So while we didn't get the outcome that some wanted, he gets a lot of credit from his time on the DOT board to chairing the transportation
committee. And the bus rapid transit system that's going up 400.
Right. He was on the Greta board at one point. So Brandon has done a lot to elevate the whole debate in transportation.
Well, he chaired the North Fulton Chamber of Commerce for a while.
He did. Yeah.
As did Karen Handel.
Oh, Karen did as well. Okay. Well, I think
they had the same position at one different times in history.
Yeah. I served briefly with Brandon, and I think he had a reputation as being a more moderate Republican and as someone that could work across the aisle really well. Now, he's going to be hampered by some votes that he, of course, had to take as being part of the Republican majority in the legislature. But I think he would have an easier time in the general election, I think, than Karen, certainly seen as less far right than her, in my opinion.
While we're talking about the 6th, the now incumbent, Lucy McBath, posted an ad on social media, I think on her website as well, that Jim shows us healthcare. She still sees healthcare, which helped her enormously in her first race, as a big issue. Basically, it says something to the effect of Republicans are killing our health, whatever.
Right, right.
Are making us sicker or whatever.
Right. It was a DCCC web ad that was going out there, but what it showed is the focus that the position that healthcare is going to take in all of the federal contests that are coming up.
Yeah. So. Let me ask you all a question, because I'm always mindful of the fact that Political Rewind is a statewide show. And so when we start focusing on congressional races, we're talking 6th and 7th, because they are the most highly competitive seats. Mm-hmm. But are we going to see across the rest of the state in 2020, is everybody just locked in, Jim?
I think, yes, I think so.
Okay.
I think that's pretty much, and as Eric was saying, money is a big part of that, mm-hmm. because you're going to have a presidential campaigns sucking all the cash out of the system. And quite frankly, we are now almost 10 years away from the last redistricting. Mm-hmm. And the weight of the populations are kind of heading toward the current incumbent.
Okay.
Plus, you get outside of Atlanta and the Atlanta region, Georgia's Trump country.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of focus of the presidential race in the areas of strength.
Well, the numbers are definitely less favorable to Democrats in some of these out the 11th, where I live, the 1st down on the coast. But I think you're going to see quality candidates, just like last time, running, because it could be another wave election.
Especially in the 11th, where Barry Loudermilk is, mm-hmm. because Loudermilk lost Cobb County.
Right.
And his district goes into Buckhead.
Right.
Too.
So Bluestein just sent a tweet. I don't know if it's a response to what we're talking about, but he says Democrats are going to have contenders in every congressional district, which hasn't always been the norm. That doesn't mean they're going to fare particularly well, but it means that Democrats statewide, Stacey, are mm-hmm. looking to get serious across Georgia.
Absolutely. You can't win if you can't run. So I think folks are going to be there, because you never know.
You know, one of these days we should talk about how Sanford Bishop, the Democrat from Southwest Georgia, really in a very red part of the state, he's been in that seat for
92?
For 15, 16 years. He manages to hold on. We should talk about him at one of these days.
We need to get him in that seat.
All right, we'll bring him in.
I think he's been there for 25 years.
Has it been that long? All right,
my math sucks. Don't forget the 7th, though. I think that's going to be a really interesting race.
Why?
Because I think that the Republicans are going to have a really spirited primary, and we don't know all the candidates yet. The one that has announced is Renee Unterman. But I think there's going to be some others, and
Brenda Lopez, she may jump in, the Democratic state rep.
Right. There'll be a primary on both sides, mm-hmm. but I think that's going to be an interesting race.
All right. While we're talking about upcoming races, Stacey Evans, no sooner had the session ended the other day than Melita Easters, mm-hmm. who runs the Georgia Win List, started talking about the candidates, the women, the pro choice women Democrats who she recruits mm-hmm. every year. She's starting to build that group of people who she wants to bring in to challenge Republican incumbents, especially after the passage of the abortion bill. Let's look at a spot mm-hmm. that Stacey Abrams' Fair Fight Georgia has now put out that tells us something about where Democrats like a Melita Easters might be headed. Let's listen.
Georgia lawmakers, they're hoping we'll forget. Forget when they trampled on women's rights. Forget about the money they tried to take from our children's schools. Forget that their faulty voting machines don't guarantee our votes will be counted. But we won't forget or stop fighting for a fairer Georgia. So let's remind them that they work for us.
Stacey Evans, the ad really is talking about 481, the bill that essentially outlaws abortion. It's talking about the fact that there were Republicans who were endorsing a scholarship bill that would have taken money from public school students and deferred it if they wanted to go off into private schools. How effective is that message going to be in both recruiting any Democrats or recruiting women like Melita Easters wants to do and then winning some of these seats?
It's going to be extremely effective, and I think the Republicans know that. It's not a secret that the Republicans were not excited that they had to vote on that heartbeat bill and that there were plenty of people who took a walk or suddenly had engagements they had to go to. I think in South Georgia in particular, the voucher issue for education is a harmful issue. And I think the fact that Brian Kemp signed the new voting machine bill essentially in private shows you that that's not something that Republicans are looking to brag about. So not only is it something that's going to be very effective for Melita and others who are great at recruiting candidates, a great shout out to Melita. She's wonderful, particularly around recruiting female candidates, but her and others who are recruiting, and the Republicans know it.
Jim and Eric, the Republican argument on the other side, especially of 481, is, are you kidding? Yes, Democrats have an issue, but we're going to mobilize all of those conservatives who for a long time have said we must do this.
Well, what you saw is Republicans actually making some gains on the abortion issue in New York and in Virginia with legislation that was assuring some women under circumstances access to late-term abortion. And then you have this bill, 481, which would ban abortions after 6 weeks, which essentially bans all abortions because women don't know that they're pregnant. So it really kind of steps on that national message, and that's where their problem is.
Mm-hmm. Eric, what do you think about this? How much? And in fact, this is a good segue, and I'll ask you to answer it in this context. Galloway has a column that he's posted online, and it will be in the paper on Sunday.
Yep.
So pick up your Constitution and read it. Basically saying that Democrats are now trying to claim the mantle of being the party of business, partly because of 481, the abortion bill, also because of the Delta jet fuel tax, which didn't pass again. Did more moderate Republicans suffer in this legislative session, and will it hurt at the voting booth in 2020?
Well, there's a number of issues to unpack in your question.
You
need to separate out the heartbeat bill, and there's no doubt that there are people, legislators, Republican legislators in the suburbs, Atlanta in the suburbs, that was very difficult. I mean, when I was on your show last time, I was, you know, applauding Deborah Silcox for standing up and casting a vote the way her constituents wanted her to vote.
A Republican who voted against the 481.
Right. That took courage to vote against the leadership. And I, you know, just listening to people, especially women in the Atlanta area and the suburbs, they weren't happy with what happened there. But there were other parts of the state where, you know, they were very happy to see that bill get passed. The business community was silent on that bill. Mm-hmm. You know, as we saw when RFRA was a big issue in the last session or two sessions ago, the business community, the chambers of commerce were very vocal in fighting the RFRA bill. They were relatively silent on the abortion bill. And when asked, the feedback you got was that, well, we have members that, you know, this is a personal issue and we don't want to get engaged in that. So I don't know if there were other reasons, but I think that the fact that they were quiet on that bill, it's the business community.
Jim, break out the Delta fuel tax. You have an interesting observation about the fact about the governor.
Right, exactly. I mean, this is something that we came across only after Sine Die, and that was that on the morning of the last day of the session, you had Governor Brian Kemp and his small followers there go to meet with the Senate Republican Caucus, and he said, He can do without any resolution on the airport, the Atlanta airport issue. He could do without any resolution on the HB 511, the rural Georgia transportation bill. What he needed and the only thing he asked for from them was the Delta tax break, and he didn't get it. And
how does that happen? The that governor, is, in a first term where you want to, if you're in his party, want to make him look as good as possible, how do you do that?
Well, he said, Jim just said, this happened the last day of the session. And so, but there's so many, look, this session, we had a new governor, a new lieutenant governor. Yeah. We had a speaker that was dealing with some issues. So there was a lot of dynamics going on. And, you know, you have the whole session to work on these issues. And that transportation bill towards the end, there were a lot of things that were lumped into it. So you don't know if there were other aspects of that that were hard to extract.
But the point is, he could not even get eight Republican votes that would have allowed him to form an alliance with Democrats in that chamber and pass the bill.
Well, it's going to be
It was a snub. It was a very significant snub.
So it'll be interesting. People should read your column. Again, you can read it at AJC.com or wait for the Sunday paper. It'll be interesting to see how much success Democrats have saying they are now the party of business. Stacey Evans, before we have to finish up, I want to turn and start with you on something else. Stacey Abrams has weighed in. Again, she was on a lot of shows yesterday promoting her book. And she weighed in again on MSNBC on the Joe Biden controversy. Let's listen to what she said, and then I want to get your take on this.
We cannot have perfection as a litmus test. The responsibility of leaders is to not be perfect, but to be accountable, to say, I've made a mistake, I understand it, and here's what I'm going to do to reform as I move forward. And I think we see Joe Biden doing that. I think the vice president has acknowledged the discomfort that he has caused. He has created context for why that is his behavior. And he has affirmed that he will do something different going forward. And I think that's what we should be looking for.
Stacey Evans, your take on all this. Is the fact that Joe Biden, I covered him, I spent a lot of time covering his first presidential campaign, covered him when he was the chair of the Judiciary Committee in Washington, and that is who Joe Biden is. He's always been the guy who embraces, who hugs, and now it's really coming back to hurt him.
Right, and I agree with a lot of what Stacey Abrams said in that segment. And I hope that we are not getting to a place in politics or in life where we can't hug each other. I hugged you when I came in.
Yeah, and you know, okay, and that's an interesting moment. Yeah. Because normally, in the old days, I would have immediately, you know, with people I know, hugged. Now, I'm a little cautious.
Right. And I hate that because human connection is important. But I spend in my day job, I am an attorney, and I spend a lot of time representing people who have been falsely accused in the media. I do a lot of defamation work, and the rush to judgment, the piling on, the conflating things like sexual assault and sexual harassment with invasion of personal space, it's very dangerous. Yeah. And I hate that this is the conversation that we're having, because I don't think it's good for society, and I think it also diminishes the true Me Too movement with sexual harassment and sexual assault to talk about Joe Biden in these same sentences, which is what's been happening throughout the media. And that bothers me.
Do you think the Democratic women will let him get past this?
I hope so. I think it would be a shame if they don't. And I think this whole situation with Joe Biden and some other situations that we've seen in Virginia and other places has really shown hypocrisy on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans. And when people are willing to come out and say, oh, he should be forgiven for that, or oh, he should be pounded for that. I think you've seen a lot of Democratic women and Democrats in general come to Joe Biden's defense, as they should, because I don't think there was any ill intention in what he did. But I don't think that same grace would have been given if this had been a Republican, and vice versa. You don't see any Republicans rushing out to defend Joe Biden, whereas they were more than happy to defend Justice Kavanaugh. So there's a lot of hypocrisy out there, and that also disturbs me.
I think some of it too is some of this is being fueled by his opponents in the presidential race.
I was going to say Democrats seem more than willing to.
Yeah, one thing that right after Biden's video came out, where he, it wasn't an apology, it was more of an explanation and a promise to change behavior. But Keisha Lance Bottoms, mayor of Atlanta, put out a tweet with a photo of her and Biden touching foreheads.
And said that she was perfectly happy with that, essentially, in the tweet,
She found it, I can't remember the word she used now, but it was...
She said, everyone's experience is their own. As for mine, I found my introduction and interaction with Joe Biden to be genuine and enduring.
Well, Oh, you had that right lined up.
We're in good shape with you. All right. one last thing, and it's got to be quick. As a Republican, Eric Tannenblatt, do you really want the president to be poking at Joe Biden over this particular issue?
No.
That was...
Simple as that.
By the way, here's where Joe Biden gets himself in trouble. He was covered live by a lot of the cables today. He was at a union gathering, and during his speech, he made a joke about this. He said, "I want you to know that I asked whoever the union leader is with their permission before I hugged him." I'm not sure that sort of thing served Biden well.
That wasn't a gaffe. I don't think that was a gaffe.
Oh, I don't think it was a gaffe either. I just think it's Joe Biden sometimes.
He was talking to a bunch of union people who are probably mostly white.
All right. We are completely.
New Hampshire.
All right. We're out of time for today's show. Stacey Evans, Eric Tannenblatt, Jim Galloway, so great to see you. I did want to take enough time to be able to say, you probably know by now, we're going out to Athens on Monday night. We'll be at the University of Georgia at Instructional Plaza, which I'm told is right next to the J School. You ought to be familiar with that, Galloway. Jim Galloway will be with us. Greg Bluestein will be with us. Charles Bullock, the Dean of Political Scientists, will be with us as well. And we're going to have a couple of students from UGA to talk about the issues that matter to them. Monday night, 7 o'clock, go to politicalrewind.org and sign up for a free ticket. That's it for us for today. Thanks for joining us for Political Rewind. See you with Galloway Monday at 2:00.